Time now for our weekly check-in on politics around the country. It's been a busy week already, with primaries yesterday in Ohio, North Carolina, and Indiana. Here in Washington, D.C., the Senate is considering a supplemental appropriations bill that includes more spending for the war in Iraq and relief for victims of Hurricane Katrina and a bunch of other issues. As it stands, the bill calls for more than $108 billion in spending, $14 billion more than the president says he's willing to accept. If you have questions for Ken Rudin about the week in politics, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. NPR's political editor Ken Rudin is with us every Wednesday here on Talk of the Nation. Nice to have you back.
Whether you want me or not, I'm here.
Three primaries yesterday, two of them really significant, Ohio especially.
Ohio was the state that put George W. Bush over the top in 2004. Its 20 electoral votes was really, most people said, responsible for his reelection. And if the Republican problems are anywhere, if they're going to be shown anywhere, they could be in Ohio this year, because you have scandals in the state government. You have a term-limited governor, Bob Taft, very unpopular. So the Republicans really, their control of state government is in jeopardy. Yesterday, mm-hmm. Kenneth Blackwell, who's African-American, the Secretary of State, won the gubernatorial primary, 57-43 against a...
Convincing.
It was not as close as some people thought it would be, against another statewide elected official, the state attorney general, and he goes into the November election against a congressman, Ted Strickland, from southeast Ohio.
Who waltzed through with 80% of the vote. We'll have more on this race in just a minute, but there were a couple of very interesting congressional primaries as well, including what we talked about last week, the race for Mr. Strickland's seat, which he left to run for governor.
The best story of all, Charlie Wilson, the state senator, the Democratic, the heir apparent, basically, to Ted Strickland's seat, very popular, very well-funded. He failed to file enough signatures. He needed 50 signatures to get on the ballot, and so the Democrats and the Republicans spent close to $1 million fighting this primary, which should have been a done deal for Charlie Wilson. As it turned out, he had to run as a write-in candidate. Only three people in history in Congress have ever been elected to Congress on a write-in, and Charlie Wilson did win his nomination pretty overwhelmingly on a write-in. Republicans tried to create some mischief. They ran ads attacking his non-entity opponent of Charlie Wilson's on the ballot, basically to divert Democratic votes to this other guy, but mm-hmm. Wilson won pretty convincingly.
Then there's the seat formerly occupied by Rob Portman, now occupied by Gene Schmidt, who after a close race, a surprisingly close race, came to Congress and then, in the eyes of many, embarrassed herself on the floor of the House of Representatives.
Right. She attacked Jack Murtha, the Democratic congressman from Pennsylvania, who called for his version of an Iraqi pullout. She said that, real Marines don't cut and run, and there was loud booing on the House floor. So Gene Schmidt, there was a whole bunch of missteps. Former Congressman Bob McEwen, who lost to Gene Schmidt in last year's special primary, ran again, but she won again, and she's pretty much safe for November. There's mm-hmm. no strong Democratic opponent there.
And then there was Rob Ney, a sitting congressman, who is also known as Congressman Number One.
Exactly. He is, with the absence of Tom DeLay, Bob Ney is probably more closely associated with convicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff than any other member of the House. Some people even talking about that it still could be an indictment of Bob Ney, and he won 68% of the vote in a three-way primary. Some people say, well, look, three out of every 10 Republicans voted for somebody else, and it shows that he's in trouble in November. But, given the fact that he is so closely linked with Abramoff, he remains popular at home, and the Democrats obviously want that seat badly in November.
Mm-hmm. And we should point out that earlier today, a Kentucky businessman pleaded guilty to substantial charges in terms of bribery of a unnamed federal official who is widely believed to be a Democratic Congressman William Jefferson of New Orleans.
Well, that's the problem for the Democrats. Democrats have been running on this national theme of culture of corruption. They want to go after Bob Ney. They went after Tom DeLay, and Tom DeLay is leaving. They're looking at Conrad Burns in Montana. But there are some Democrats who have ethics problems, too. We see that with Bill Jefferson, who may face his own indictment in New Orleans. There's Alan Mollahan, the former ranking member of the House Ethics Committee from West Virginia. He has ethical problems. And if you talk to voters, many will say that this is a widespread problem. This is not a Republican problem. It's a widespread problem. Democrats, of course, this drives Democrats nuts because they would love to run on this theme in November.
And one other primary race, that for district attorney in Durham, North Carolina. This is the race where Mike Nifong, the man who's prosecuting a couple of Duke University students in the lacrosse scandal, he was running for the nod.
That's right. The Democratic nomination. There is no Republican candidate, and the whole issue is really about his handling of the lacrosse students' rape case. And he won not with a majority, but in North Carolina, you only need more than 40% to avoid a runoff, and he survived.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with NPR's political editor, our political junkie, Ken Rudin. You can read his columns at npr.org. And if you'd like to join the conversation, our number 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's bring another voice into the conversation. Robert A. George, an editorial writer at the New York Post, a frequent commentator on NPR's News and Notes. Nice to have you on the program today.
Good to be here, Ken. Thank you very much.
And he's Ken, I'm Neil. But anyway, we were talking about earlier the election of Kenneth Blackwell, the black Secretary of State in Ohio, to be the Republican candidate for governor there, one of several black African Americans who are running for statewide office in, well, middle Atlantic and northeastern states.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very impressive group that they've got out there. I mean, obviously, there have been a number of African Americans running as Republicans over the years, but this is a group where, I mean, their qualifications are unquestioned. They're very strong, powerful, very able to discuss both the Republican platform, very comfortable with it, but also their own backgrounds as African Americans, as strong, connected members of the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting you say that they're able to articulate their political positions. Lynn Swann, the Hall of Fame receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers, now running for in Pennsylvania statewide for Senate, he's had some trouble from time to time for governor. Excuse me, he's had some trouble from time to time articulating his positions.
Well, I mean, I think on an individual basis, he's interesting because I mean he's kind of the I guess you'd call him the to use a sports metaphor, he's kind of the rookie. This is his first run for office, and obviously he's going to have some stumbles here and there. In Maryland, obviously, with Michael Steele, he's the incumbent lieutenant governor. Ken Blackwell has been Secretary of State in Ohio for many years. I think what you're seeing, as opposed to in the past, where you might have, say, you know, an Alan Keyes or other neophytes who it was very easy for their opponents to portray them as being, you know, sellouts to the black community. That's one of the usual criticisms of black Republicans. Mm-hmm. These individuals have strong roots within the black community, but also manage to work well within Republican circles as well. And also, very important, they all have the real strong support of both the state and national party organizations.
Robert, it's Ken Rudin here. We always talk about that black Republican candidates might attract some black voters who normally would vote for Democrats. But what about the obverse and the fact that maybe white conservative rural voters may switch to the Democratic candidates because of a black Republican nominee?
That's a possibility, and I think in particular will be interesting to see what happens in Ohio with Ken Blackwell, because he, in addition to having roots in the black community, he also has had even more so than the establishment Republican Party there. He's created very strong relationships with a lot of the Christian conservative groups down there. So I think it will really be interesting. It will be interesting to see whether you have a reverse backlash going against him. I think it will be. You can't really predict these things, but I think, based on what I've seen in terms of the relationship that he's cultivated over the years, I think it will be minimal at best.
Robert George, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Robert George, an editorial writer at the New York Post and a regular on NPR's News and Notes. And let's get a caller on the line. This is Tom. Tom's calling us from Tiverton, Rhode Island.
Hi, I have a question for Ken about Stephen Colbert's appearance at the correspondents' dinner. It's all over the web, and I thought it was genius. Apparently, the punditocracy has not been too thrilled with it. I was wondering if he was there or how he reads how that performance has been received.
Oh, it's not an event unless Ken is there.
Well, no, this is a fascinating question. I love this question because I was there. Another reason I was there is that the cleaning crew at NPR, they turned down the ticket, so they had an extra ticket for me. But I was there, and I was part of the majority there who thought that he bombed, that he was not that funny, not because he had the nerve to take on President Bush, not the nerve that he took on the press, but I just didn't think he was that funny. And I was having this interesting conversation a few minutes ago with David Folkenflik, NPR's media correspondent, and he said it's very interesting. It's like the Oscars, like Jon Stewart at the Oscars. In the hall, in the theater, people didn't think it was funny. But at home, and Folkenflik was telling me, at home he thought it was hysterically funny.
I also happened to be there. A lot of the cleaning crew didn't want to go. But I also thought, and just quickly, he came after that George W. Bush double act with the impersonator, which was surprising and very funny, and it was a bit of an anticlimax. So, Tom, I'm afraid that's the report from this end. Thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. And I guess that's all the time we have for some good questions on the line. If you want to read the Political Junkie column that Ken writes every week, you can go to npr.org. And, of course, we're going to try to get to your questions in the course of our coverage. The race for Lane Evans' seat in Illinois and politicians talking about gas prices but not doing anything. Well, in 19 seconds, we just don't have time. Ken Rudin, thanks very much for being with us.
Neil, I can stay here. I have plenty of time.
You got plenty of time?
Yeah, we got another show to do.
We're going to be back next week with Ken Rudin and the Political Junkie segment. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.